This is Human Rights Radio. I'm Jesse Bangu. In the first part of this report, we gave some background and history of human rights abuses committed in Israel. In this second part, we will start in 1987, when Palestinians had begun an uprising, or intifada, against Israeli rule in the occupied territories. About 20 Israelis were killed within the first 2 years. Israel reacted with extreme force, killing or injuring thousands of Palestinians. In January 1993, talks began in secret in Oslo, Norway, between Israel and the PLO to try to reach an accord. But in July, violence in Lebanon intervened when 7 Israeli soldiers were killed. Israel and the PLO met again in Cairo to implement the accord they had reached in Oslo. But on February 25, 1994, a militant Israeli attacked a mosque in Hebron, killing 29 Palestinians.
Brock Goldstein, who was a Brooklyn Jew who moved to Hebron, opened fire in the Hebron mosque and killed, I don't remember how many worshippers, 20 or 30.
Israel released control of some of the occupied territories to the newly formed Palestinian Authority. In 1995, the Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated. In 1996, Israel began a new bombing of Lebanon, including an attack on a United Nations base in the village of Qana, which killed 100 people. Israel claimed that the shelling was unintentional, but the UN disagreed and demanded compensation. In retaliation, the anti-Zionist group Hezbollah attacked civilian areas in northern Israel. Israel also began two controversial projects around this time. One, opening an archaeological site that was near Muslim shrines in Jerusalem, and two, building a new settlement in occupied East Jerusalem. Following these actions, a unique form of violence developed, which would quickly capture widespread media attention: Palestine suicide bombings.
The Palestinian suicide bombings are an interesting phenomenon, and they come in waves. So then for the last 8 years is when we've really seen the suicide bombings in Israeli cities.
But Palestinian groups, including the Palestinian Authority, have been accused of other human rights violations as well.
The Palestinian Authority is not a very good government in terms of human rights. But the Palestinian Authority arrests people in the name of security for Israel. They go and do mass arrests of militants at times. They have closed trials. They carry out the death penalty with very little process. The problem with talking about the Palestinian Authority is that it has so little control, and that so much of the human rights violations in the Palestinian territories are not as a result of the Palestinian Authority, but rather as a result of Hamas or other groups that take the law into their own hands.
Some Palestinian groups justify use of violence because they do not recognize Israel as a legitimate occupying force in the West Bank. Others, such as Hamas, take a more extreme position and approve of violence against Israeli civilians in Israel proper as well. In January 2000, a new deal between Israel and Palestinians failed amid complaints over increased Israeli settlement in the West Bank. A peace summit in July 2000 failed to reach a solution that both sides could agree on. In April 2002, the Israeli Defense Forces, or IDF, initiated attacks on civilians in refugee camps in Jenin and Nablus, resulting in some of the most serious abuses since those in Lebanon 20 years earlier. International organizations who visited the sites reported evidence of civilian killing, denial of medical, legal, and humanitarian access, excessive use of force, indiscriminate firing of weapons, extrajudicial executions, use of human shields, and violations of the neutrality of medical personnel. Noah Heidekdale comments on these last two points.
They did find evidence of Israel using civilians as shields when they were going in to search houses. Israel has claimed that militants use ambulances and use the cover of military personnel in order to move from one place to another. This may very well be true. I don't want to say that it's not because I don't have that evidence. But I think that it's in Israel's best interest, both politically and in terms of human rights, to find a better way, a better policy than shooting at ambulances. And I think that this is part of that process. If they make people so uncomfortable living in the West Bank, if they make their lives miserable and destroy everything that they own, perhaps they will want to leave.
Near East Report interviewed an IDF sergeant, Jonathan Alster, who was involved in the attacks. He claimed that the refugees were warned before their homes were destroyed. But bulldozer operator Moshe Nissim was quoted by the journal Covert Action Quarterly, who reported him saying that, quote, "I had no mercy for anybody. They were warned by loudspeaker to get out of the houses before I came, but I gave no one a chance. I didn't wait. I would just ram the house with full power to bring it down as fast as possible. It was all under orders." Unquote. Ulster did admit that they could have given more advance warning for refugees to evacuate, but chose not to do so. But he also claimed that the refugees were the ones using human shields. Israel has made other claims of human rights violations too. For example, it has brought legal action against Marwan Barghouti, the alleged head of the Fatah Tanzim militia. Israel claims that on January 7, 2002, Barghouti signed a document requesting financial support for Fatah terrorists directly from the Palestinian Authority chairman, Yasser Arafat. They also claim that Barghouti ordered attacks on Israel checkpoints in the West Bank and Gaza Strip and endorsed the guerrilla tactics of Hezbollah. Noah Heidegdale comments on Marwan Barghouti.
There was an op-ed piece by him in the New York Times not too long ago, perhaps a year ago, and in that he stated that settlers and Israeli military in the West Bank and Gaza are valid targets for resistance. They are invaders. They are invading Palestinian land. It is Palestinians' right by international law to fight against them. He also said that it is completely illegitimate to attack inside Israel proper, inside the recognized international boundaries of Israel.
The Al-Aqsa group has claimed Barghouti as their leader. Al-Aqsa has committed attacks on Israelis, including suicide bombings. Barghouti does not claim official affiliation with the group and counters that he has campaigned against human rights abuses attributed to Yasser Arafat. Marwan Barghouti is currently one of over 850 held without charge by Israel. His trial will not be open, furthering concerns by human rights groups that there is no actual evidence against him.
Anytime a trial is closed, I think we have to assume that it's not fair. Otherwise, it wouldn't be closed.
The IDF has attempted to assassinate Barghouti on previous occasions, but only managed to kill his wife and three children. Marwan Barghouti has countered with his own accusation of human rights abuses committed by Israel during 54 Israeli attacks on Palestinian civilians, including children, medical personnel, journalists, and human rights observers. More specifically, he has accused Israel of violating many internationally recognized basic rights, including illegal detention, disruption of public life, racial discrimination, collective punishment, torture, cruel, inhuman, and degrading punishment, house destruction, exploitation of labor, deprivation of fundamental freedoms, political assassination, war crimes specifically targeting women, arbitrary arrest, ethnic cleansing, and genocide and crimes against humanity. He also lists a series of 85 United Nations Security Council resolutions which explicitly protect these rights. Israel has not commented much on their human rights record, but they have described their tactics as defensive. Noah comments on Israel's defense policy.
Israel has need to defend itself, and honestly, it has a right to defend itself. It is under attack from Palestinian radicals. But that is no excuse for violating human rights, in my opinion. Israeli defense is often used as an excuse to further punish Palestinians en masse.
The United Nations has attempted to address some of the issues, such as in their resolutions 242 and 338, as mentioned earlier. More recently, the UN voted on a new resolution expressing concern at Israel's killing of relief workers. The United States vetoed the measure, with Bulgaria and Cameroon abstaining. The resolution followed two incidents in which Israeli soldiers shot and killed United Nations relief workers in Gaza and the West Bank on November 22nd and December 6th, 2002. For more information on human rights in Israel, many resources are available on the Internet.
Our webpage has quite a bit of information, www.clubs.arizona.edu/APJME. Or you can just email us at apjmeua@hotmail.com. I would highly recommend Israeli newspapers, Haaretz and Jerusalem Post. You can look both of those up online. There's also Al Ahram Weekly, which is an Egyptian paper. The weekly version of it comes out in English. The Electronic Intifada is an internet-based information center for information about this.
The Electronic Intifada is found at electronicintifada.net. Also, Human Rights Watch has several reports, including their new country report for 2003. Look at www.hrw.org/campaigns/Israel. The final part of this report is next, which consists of some personal stories from Israel. This is Human Rights Radio. I'm Jesse Bangu.